Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton. And in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Mr. Stone, how are things in your world?
Going really well. Looking forward to another morning dedicated to celebrating top performers, producing better results in less time. Today's segment is going to be brought to us by BusinessWise, better data, better decisions. So we've gotten to know the folks over at BusinessWise in recent months. What do you think about that outfit?
Yeah, I think it's a great service, a great resource. I know we use it quite a bit to help us identify good guests for our shows. So I think it's definitely worth checking out. If you need a good Atlanta database, they are the ones that have it.
Well, I think that's part of it, too. They really are. Atlanta and is somewhere in Texas and maybe Charlotte, I think, are their
right.
Three, right?
But mainly Atlanta and Georgia.
But so well updated. I mean, they really are on top of the Atlanta business market. We're delighted to be partners with them, and we're equally delighted at the show that we're going to be able to provide this morning. A little bit later in the segment, we are going to hear from Al Myers. We're going to get an update on what's happening with TEDx Peachtree. And one of his colleagues has been out to the big TEDx, and we're going to hear a little bit about that as well. And we're also going to have David Duncan with EO and Patty Wax. We're going to hear from him again. So we've got a lot of return visitors this morning.
That's right, but not our first guest.
Not our first guest. First up on the High Velocity Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from AGH, CPA and Business Advisory, Mr. Randy Gold. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks so much. Good morning.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you. So I know a lot of us probably think we know what CPA and business advisory is, but how about educating us? What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Sure. Well, at AGH, we practice in a lot of different areas. We have four main practice areas: real estate, closely held business, healthcare, and estates and trusts. Our practice really is designed to be full service across all different industries. Our real estate practice is our fastest growing practice. We represent two different types of real estate companies, a lot of local developers, shopping center, multifamily office developers, but we also represent a number of institutional real estate investors, be they private equity firms, life insurance companies, pension funds, and those guys are doing real estate projects in the $100 to $250 million range.
How'd you get into this business? Like, when you were a kid, are you dreaming one day I'm going to be a CPA?
Yes, I always dreamed of being a CPA. Doesn't everybody dream of that?
I mean, some people do.
I think it's the natural thing. No, the truth is, for me, both my parents were in business, so I knew that I would be in
business.
Are
they accountants?
My parents own their own businesses. They're not accountants. My mom owns a shoe store, and my dad owns a printing company.
Okay.
But I knew I would be in business. And when I was in college and my friends were graduating with degrees and couldn't find a job, I knew that as an accounting major, I could find a job. So that's how I ended up being in accounting. Sure enough, here I am, 20-something years later.
Now, you were recently honored as one of the 40 under 40. How did that come about? You must be good at the CPA thing.
I think that our firm is very good at the CPA thing, and our firm continues to grow like crazy. And as a result of that growth, our firm has been recognized in a number of different ways. And as a member of that leadership team, I was also recognized, which is a very nice thing. I've been in the community for quite a long time, in the philanthropic community and also in the business community.
Uh-huh.
And so, you get recognized for doing good things, as we all know.
Now, does that go hand in hand, you think, giving back and, success in business?
It's so much a part of not just who I am, but who our firm is. We talk about it every day. We take care of our people, we take care of our clients, and we take care of our community. Our firm has a very long tradition of being active in the community and giving back. I had that tradition growing up in my own house, so it's a natural fit for me.
So what are some of the common mistakes that people make when it comes to engaging and working with a CPA and business advisor in your experience?
I would say the most common mistake is they don't engage a CPA early enough. We see it all the time. We can help on the front end avoid mistakes much better than we can help unwind the mistakes that have been made. So we would always say that one of the first things that you should do is engage a good professional team. It might be a lawyer. It might be your insurance guy. It certainly should be a CPA. Get them involved early so that you don't make mistakes that can't be fixed.
So in your mind, that every business owner should have that kind of triad of insurance person, accountant, and lawyer?
I think every business is different. So you may need different parts of the team, and you
right.
might need different types of lawyers, and you might need different types of other consultant providers. From our perspective, Everybody today is worried about the bottom line.
Right.
And we've seen over the past number of years, cutting expenses, cutting expenses, cutting expenses. You can only cut so much, and most people have cut as much as they're going to be able to cut.
Right.
Now you've got to focus on the top line. You've got to grow that top line revenue to make it today. And when you have a CPA who's with you every step of the way, working with your closely held business,
right,
all of this income and all of this effort flows to you as an individual. This is your lifestyle.
Sure.
This is your life that we're talking about. You want that person that you can trust with you every step of the way.
Now, when you're working with somebody, it sounds it's more consultative. It's not like, oh, just send me your taxes every quarter or send me a big pile of stuff. You're kind of in my business on a regular basis?
Absolutely. You know, it depends on your business need. We have many clients where we are their outsourced CFO, and we're in their business almost every single day. There are other clients that we see monthly or quarterly. The clients that we see once a year who say, we just want you to do our taxes, those are the ones that we can't help quite as much,
right?
Because we're not there every single day.
That's a great tagline, AGH, up in your business.
You know what? I'm going to talk to our marketing people about
we
that.
We could record you a nice little commercial here in the studio. Or we could say
it.
Business, right?
Say business.
Up in your business.
Right.
You know, whatever works, and I think that that might work just fine. So we'll talk to our marketing folks.
So how do you go to market? Does most of your business come from this triad that Lee's describing, or are you out there advertising? How do you get your business?
So much of our business is, like other businesses, relationship. And so we are out in the marketplace every single day talking to folks, meeting new people, talking to our current clients and asking for referrals. Our business does not come from advertising. It doesn't come from the yellow pages in the phone book. It comes from building relationships, and we've been very good at that over the past 30-something years that our firm has been around. Over the past 5 years, we've grown dramatically. The Business Chronicle named us the fastest-growing accounting firm over the last 5 years, 2 years in a row. So it's relationship-based. It's growing through knowing people, doing a good job, growing your existing client base, and I think our clients are very, very happy.
Now, what's the pain a new client is feeling where they're like, you know what, I got to get rid of my existing accounting firm. I got to go with you guys.
We see lots of different types of pain. We see businesses that are on the decline. We see businesses that have stagnated. We see a lot of businesses that are growing so fast that their current system, their current accounting system, you know, can't handle it.
Right.
We also see a lot of our clients that are with large national firms who realize that they're not getting the attention that they need. They're not getting any individualized help. They're paying way too much in fees. And believe it or not, most of our business today comes from folks that were with large national firms. They come to us because they know that they'll get the attention that they deserve.
Now, when I'm working with a firm of your size, is it reasonable for me to expect that you're going to help me grow my business outside of just the nuts and bolts of what you're doing as an accounting firm? Are you going to be making connections for me and helping me kind of partner with the right people?
You know, it's one of the things that our firm is really known for. For 30-something years, we have been connecting people. And while I can't tell you that we're going to help you grow your business outside of what we do, what I can tell you is that if we know someone that will help you in your business, we want to make that connection.
Right.
We've connected multiple clients. You know, it happens almost every single day in our office. And when we can connect clients and they can do a deal together, or connect to somebody else and they can do a deal together, we feel great about that.
Now, you were recently awarded another honor that we were talking about before we went on air. Tell us a little bit about that, and tell us a little bit about the organization associated with that.
So my wife and I were just named the 2011 Jewish Federations of North America Jewish Community Hero. We feel so honored, really, to be named the Jewish Community Hero. We started an organization called Jewish Gene Screen. You can find it online at jewishgenescreen.org. We have a daughter who has a genetic disease. Our daughter is 4 years old. Her name is Eden, and she has a disease called mucolipidosis type 4, ML4 for short. You can read about her disease at ml4.org. And we created this organization to help promote awareness of the need for screening of what is today 19 known preventable Jewish genetic diseases. Many in the Jewish community don't know to be screened for these diseases before they get married, or they know to get screened for one or two of the diseases. Caroline and I were screened for diseases before we got married, but we weren't screened for all 19, and we weren't, unfortunately, screened for ML4, which we then gave to our daughter. So our program is funded by the Marcus Foundation here in Atlanta, And we've increased the screening percentage in Atlanta by over 500% in the last year. We expect that our program will go national next year, and we'll be setting the standard for Jewish genetic disease screening really across the country. Our program is about having healthy kids, and it's just as simple as a little blood test.
That's got to be incredibly rewarding work. That has to feel good.
It does. It feels great. We have a difficult home life. Eden needs lots of care. But Caroline and I say that Eden is saving lives every single day. And if that's what she's here to do, there's no more noble life than that. So that feels really good.
So what's next for you, and what's next for AGH? What's on the horizon?
So we merged in a firm in July of 2010. We would look to merge in another firm if it's the right fit. We hope to continue to grow. Like I said, we've grown over the past few years dramatically. We have 85 folks now in-house.
Maybe you should have a radio network.
the AGH, we're up in your business radio network.
Right. I like that.
So we hope to continue to grow. We see blue skies ahead, and so the firm will continue to do great things. We will be very involved in the community. I personally will be involved with Jewish Gene Screen as it goes national. And there's no time for sleep, so we'll just keep forging ahead.
So how can our listeners learn more?
I welcome them to visit our website at aghllc.com. You can read about our practice areas, and you can read about some of our professionals online. And you can certainly call us at 404-233-5486.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning. Thoroughly enjoyed it. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I would be delighted. Thanks.
Terrific. Lee Almyers, TEDx Peachtree.
You don't have to say anything else.
He is in the house. Welcome back, Mr. Al.
Stone and Lee, thank you for having me back again.
So what's happening over there, man? Lots of stuff, right?
Oh, geez. It depends on the day, actually. Well, I mean, Jackie Chu, who is our newly minted co-organizer, just came back from the annual TED conference. She was at TED Active in Palm Springs.
And
it was her first one, and it was, as I anticipated, a transformational experience for her. Jackie really understands what this is now. This is not, as I was talking to you guys earlier, we want to take the word conference or event off of every element of our website, because it's not a conference or event. It's a multi-sensory experience. It's a movement with a cult-like following. And that's what she understands. And so we have all these, she came back with a treasure trove of ideas. When she gets back from South by Southwest, we'll actually get to sit down and talk about the huge list of ideas that she's got that we're going to get to use for the benefit of TEDx Peachtree this year.
Now, Jackie had been involved in TEDx Peachtree since the beginning, right?
She came in midway through 2009 and has been with us for every event and ever since.
And then, so she had gone through, so now three of your events here at TEDx Peachtree, and then she went out to the Big TED, and then that was transformative.
It was transformative. I mean, she is the first of
two. She thought she knew what she was getting into a little bit.
Yeah,
but she was
sort of in denial. She didn't quite believe me when I said this is going to change your life, and it has. And then we have another person in our group, Chandra Farley, who is going to TEDx Summit next month. She got, I think we talked last time, an all expense paid trip to Doha, Qatar. It's a best practices event for all, as many TEDx organizers as possible to talk about, ideas, information exchange, how to make these events as good as they can be.
So participating with TEDx, this has obviously had a tremendous impact on you personally. Can you just speak more to that and how you feel like you've grown personally through this?
I think it's, well, I brought this to Atlanta because I had spoken at TED in Palm Springs, and I had already been out there. I was out there in 2008 and 2009, and I understood what this was. And when they started the TEDx program, I quickly grabbed the license because I thought that Atlanta could use this type of out-of-the-box thinking and getting people to think about issues much bigger than themselves, but also to shine a light on a lot of talent in Atlanta that most people don't even know about. So for me to be able to have been able to take this idea and to create a movement here is been one of the most rewarding things in my professional career, because I don't get any monetary pleasure out of this. I do this 100% for the community and to try to energize volunteers and to get them to understand what the power of ideas can do for not only them personally, but communally.
Now, for the two people that maybe don't understand the TEDx and TED, why don't you explain the difference between TED and TEDx and kind of, I know you mentioned it briefly, but let people know that TEDx is a completely all-volunteer endeavor, right?
This yes.
There's no paid staff. Nobody's getting paid to participate or anything regarding
yes.
this, right?
Yeah, there's an annual TED conference that takes place every year. And then a few years ago, TED decided, well, why don't we let our community build the brand for us? Because their community was exploding. You know, there's been about almost 1,000 TED Talks, and you can find them at TED.com, and they've been downloaded about 500 million times around the world. I mean, you couldn't get away from the TED brand because at the during the holiday season, it was on every iPad commercial.
And TED is technology, entertainment, and design.
Yes, and it started 25 years ago, and it's just evolved ever since. The X stands for independently organized event, and so since 2009, there have been over 3,000 TEDx events around the world in more than 120 countries.
Oh, see, I've been calling it TED Al.
and over 40 languages, and there have been over 13,000 TEDx talks that have taken place, and only about 120 of them have been selected by TED to become TED Talks.
Wow.
And we have one of them, and I know that we're going to have more. TED has told us that we are absolutely in the top tier of TEDx events, not only from an experience point of view, from a production quality. And so, you know, I'm just privileged that we have such a great team of volunteers, because without the team, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing for the community.
Now, you have to make the cut just to attend this thing, and not just anybody and their stepbrother can come to this thing, right?
For our event or the Big TED?
For your event.
For our event,
don't you have to be invited?
Yes.
Right?
Well, you
I
have
mean,
to
Lee
be accepted.
In, right?
You have to fill out an application. Anybody can. And then we do curate the event. So, you know, we don't have our application is not nearly as extensive as the Big TED, which is like a college application. But you know, you have to want to be there. You have to understand what TED is, and you know, this is not like your typical trade conference. You're not there to pitch. You're there to be inspired. Once you get to know people, you know, when you're having casual conversations, maybe you can, you know, network and things come up. But you're not there first and foremost to pitch a business or whatever. It's a different experience. We have to curate the event, and it's, but this year we're hoping that we're going to blow the doors off this year. We're hoping to have 350 to 400 people, and it'll be on November 2nd. And we are weeks away from announcing the venue. It's a new venue, and it's going to allow us to do a lot more things. And we have so many ideas that we're going to be doing to make the event even better this year.
Now, from a speaker standpoint, how does one become a speaker, and how do you choose?
So it comes from many sources. One, we actually have a call for speakers on our website. You can nominate a speaker if you think that they fit the mold of what a TED talk is. The team will also scout out and find people. So sometimes we have to do some of our own investigating and pitching. It comes from, you know, a multitude of sources. We will have all of our speakers lined up before the applications open up, you know, at the beginning of the summer, where we've got an initial group of speakers that we've already identified. We're pretty close to nailing maybe half, but we haven't announced any of them yet, and we will, you know, in the coming, you know.
How many speakers do you anticipate?
If all goes well, probably have in the, you know, 9 or 10. That will be live, and then of course we sprinkle a couple of TED Talks in there for not only for because we're required to, but I think it also adds a nice element to it, a complimentary element. And not all of our speakers are speakers. That some of them are entertainers. They may be dancers, they may be singers, they may be musicians. We haven't nailed those down yet, but there's going to be some pretty cool entertainers this year as well.
Well, and it's a fascinating, very eclectic mix. As you know, Lee, this is not just a lineup of good, motivating corporate speakers. These people come from all kinds of disciplines that open your eyes to worlds that you haven't explored before. It's fascinating to me.
I mean, they could be from academia. It could be from health, you know, medicine. It could be from innovation. It could be technological inventions. It could be from, in the environment, sustainability type stuff, education. It's come from a lot of sources. I mean, we were talking before the show. I mean, this is the power of the TED brand. I don't think I've ever seen it this robust as it is this year. But at the Big Ted, there was one speaker this year. His name was Brian Stevenson. Did no assets, just talked for 18 minutes. He's a human rights lawyer. He got the longest standing ovation. And then Ted did something that they don't normally do because they don't fundraise. They, other than their Ted Prize, which I'd like to talk about in a second. Chris Anderson, the host, you know, asked Brian, "What do you need?" In 2 days, the Ted community raised $1.1 million for this guy.
Wow.
And you know, and as soon as his talk was put up, it got a 500,000 hits in about less than a week. That's how strong this community is. That, you know, people need to understand that you get into it, even if you get in through a TEDx event, you're now getting your idea transmitted to the world. And you know, the other big thing, as I was saying, that the TED Prize was a major thing this year because for the first time ever, this is the one prize, the one thing that TED does where they try to go from ideas worth spreading to ideas worth doing. And this year, it was not an individual that got it. It was an idea. First time ever. It was the City 2.0. So what will the future city be like? And so the TED community with partners gave the world a gift. It's called city2.org. It is an open source collaboration platform where citizen-led experiments can be designed to help build the future Atlanta or the future Rio de Janeiro or whatever. One of the speakers during this session at TED was the mayor of Rio, who has got a state-of-the-art control center, but he has increased the reach of his mass transit system from 18% to 63%, which is unbelievable. And he talks about the things that you need for a future, for a sustainable city. And so I'm going to be out there talking about this. You'll hopefully be seeing some stuff in the local press in the next couple of weeks. But we want to, you know, we want to expose people to this wish. And then our hope is that the community will come together and start to use it, because this is a gift that TED has given free for the world to use. So Atlanta should use it.
So how can the Atlanta business community help you? What do you need from the Atlanta business community? You have so much going for you. Do you need sponsorship? Do you need money? What do
you
need?
Yeah, we're always looking for new sponsors. So certainly we have a lot of sponsors coming back from last year, which we're delighted about. We're always looking for new sponsors, people that want to be associated with this very global brand that's about innovation and about the power of ideas. We are also looking for if people think that they have presenters that they think would fit the TED mold, they certainly should go to our website, TEDxPeachTree.com, and promote their nominate their speakers.
Because there's still time for speakers, right?
You absolutely. It's a rolling process. You know, we won't lock things down until close to probably the end, you know, July, August, when we open up the application process. By then, we will absolutely have the program set.
Well, before we let you go, get us caught up real quickly on what you and your buddy Dante are doing with the music stuff.
The Atlanta Music Project. So yeah. For those who don't know, so that actually was birthed out of the 2009 TED Prize, which was about El Sistema, which is a Venezuelan, it's called The System in Spanish, which saves kids through music. And so we have a program with about 70 students, all below the poverty line, that are basically giving them 2 hours a day, 5 days a week of after-school music instruction. And we've raised over $500,000 in about 2 years.
Wow.
The big thing there is that we just had our winter concerts, but in May 19th, actually, at 2 p.m., is going to be the first joint concert between our two sites. It will be at the Cone Rec Center at 2 p.m., and our hope is we expect the mayor to be there. Robert Spano from the Atlanta Symphony is going to conduct elements of it, and there will be some other very, very special guests. And so you can find it all about the Atlanta Music Project at atlantamusicproject.org. It's been one of the other joys in my life to be able to, you know, help these kids and show that, you know, music can get these kids out of poverty and also help them to achieve academically.
Inspiring, invigorating, intriguing, informational conversation with you like it always is. Thanks so much for coming back and visiting with us, man. Well,
Stone and Leah, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your interest and for having me on again.
Yes, sir. And just one more time, the URL, TEDxPeachTree.
TEDxPeachTree.com.
Terrific. Hey, hang out with us a little bit while we visit with our last two guests, will you?
Love to. Thank you.
All right. I'll tell you what, I'm worn out.
I know. It's like a job now.
Well, I know. But Al moves so fast. He's got so much going on. But we still got lots more to go, right?
Absolutely.
So next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, from Patty Wax and from EO, which is Entrepreneurs Organization, is our good buddy David Duncan. Welcome back to the studio, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, sir. Or we could try it with a mic on.
Yeah, we'll do that. Let's try that.
Thank you very much for having me back.
There you go.
That's even better. You sound so much better with a mic on.
Yes.
What's been going on in your world since we saw you last, man?
Well, actually, I'm no longer with Paddy Wax.
Okay.
I sold my remaining equity in that business and taken a little bit of time to figure out the
You're
next
regrouping?
Opportunity. I'm regrouping.
He's a gentleman
okay.
of leisure now.
Yeah.
Are you still with EO? Or do we just
Absolutely.
Need to start the
no,
whole broadcast over?
I am with EO. I'll be starting in June of this year, or July 1st of this year, I'll be the president of the organization again.
So they let unemployed people become the president?
Yeah, really.
I've got 2 years to reclassify. And we've got a conference coming in April in about 45 days that we're very excited about. We're bringing 450 entrepreneurs from the East Coast in. It's at the Lowe's Hotel. We've got some great learning content set up for them and several fabulous speakers. And I'm very excited about this coming year. I'm using it as a kind of a reevaluation year for myself. Nothing like throwing myself into an environment with 130 other Atlanta business owners to try to figure out my next move.
So give our listeners, if you would, a little primer on EO. Remind everybody what this organization is all about.
So it's called the Entrepreneurs Organization. It's a global nonprofit. We've got about 8,000 members all over the world, 68 different countries, about 130 different chapters. And it's based in, your city is where the chapter would be. So in EO Atlanta, we've got about 130 members and represent about $1 billion in annual revenue in this market. The minimum threshold for membership, if you're an entrepreneur, is $1 million in annual revenue, but our average is about $12 million. And it's just...
Lee carries that around in his back pocket.
Exactly. That's couch money, I call it.
Our overall vision of the organization is to build the world's most influential community of entrepreneurs. And I've been a member for going on 8 years, and that vision has really stuck with me. That's what I'm carrying is my vision for the local chapter this coming year is to build Atlanta's most influential community of entrepreneurs. It's not about networking necessarily and getting new business. It's about learning from others' experience. So it's experience sharing and education.
Well, I want to share something, give a little shout out to you and your organization. As many of our listeners know, we're looking at replicating this business and trying to provide this platform all over the country and in key locations all over the world. I expressed an interest to you some months back in putting studios in Manchester and London. And as a product of one phone call, David Duncan set me up with a gentleman over there who just absolutely rolled out the red carpet for me, embraced me, gave me office space to work from, helped me make connections. And I get the sense that's just how you guys roll. That was wonderful.
Yeah. Typically, that's a very gracious, accepting organization. When one of the benefits is for me is when I travel, I can – regardless of where I am, generally look up an EO member and even if I don't know him or her, have a great conversation, feel welcome. Automatically, there's a rapport there. So anytime someone contacts me from another chapter, I do whatever I can to help them out.
Well, now I may have burned out your London contact.
No, you did not.
Okay.
Trust me. I've heard from him.
Oh, good.
So you mentioned this conference. What do you expect to accomplish during this conference?
Well, it's EO members coming in, so it's really just an education event for us.
So it's like a big EO meeting on steroids?
It is.
And it is. So it's from people all over the country?
The Eastern U.S. We consider it a regional event, so it's chapters from New York all the way through Charlotte, Tennessee, Atlanta,
and so then,
Florida.
Will there be sessions about different subject matter? Is that
sure.
how it's going to be?
It's a two-day event, and we've got the theme of the event is Dream Challenge Lead. We've got several keynote speakers lined up. We're very fortunate. One of the ones I'm most excited about having is the three hikers that were held hostage in Iran.
Oh, wow.
Coming to present to us, as well as currently we've got Frank Ruggiero, who's a senior State Department official involved with Iran, coming to talk. Very excited about hearing them speak. And then we've got several different breakout sessions in between the
Some of them are more tactical and practical, or
some of them are going to be tactical, practical, inspirational.
Right.
We're covering several different topics.
And is that a typical EO meeting where
it
you
is.
Cover those kind of some big picture stuff and then some down in the woods?
Absolutely. We want to go the full spectrum of providing very solid takeaway tactical learning, right, as well as inspirational content.
So let's get some on-air consulting and counsel. So many of our listeners are either aspiring entrepreneurs or they are entrepreneurs. They're in the throe of this. You have obviously been very successful. Now you've cashed out of this one effort. What advice, if any, would you share with our listeners who are looking to follow that same path?
Work with a great CPA. Focus on your top line.
Right.
That's a good discipline, huh?
Yes. my advice is to take the risk. I don't think there's any time like the present as far as opportunity for people. The country we live in, the environment we live in, it's easy in some respects to go start your own opportunity.
Right. What do you think holds people back? Because I'm sure
fear.
Fear of what?
Of failure.
But so they'd rather be in something that's not fulfilling, not satisfying.
That's the devil they know.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, sometimes even though they might not like the environment they're in or what they're doing, it's safe.
But is it really safe?
I don't believe so. But, getting people to change their habits, I think, is a difficult thing.
Right.
And if someone does take the chance on themselves and does fail, get back up and do it again. And I think that there's a lot of learning that comes from that, a lot of self-respect that comes from that.
Right.
So,
is there any part of EO that kind of works with children to get them to change their mindset to be more entrepreneurial?
We've got some initiatives in place that we're talking about. We've got some other programs that are go towards college students,
uh-huh,
and emerging entrepreneurs.
We have some people in the Radio X family that act like children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Immature people.
Might be a connection. Uh-huh.
There's many, many EO members that act like children.
So you brought a guest with you today.
Yes.
Please introduce him, and let's get a chance to talk with him a little bit.
Well, I've got Scott Weiss from Speakeasy, who is actually a new EO member, and not only a new EO member, but going to join me on the board for next year.
Very nice. So he's gullible as well. He's a nice guy.
Did he know he was going to be on the board, or are you springing that on him here?
It was a package.
So tell us a little bit about Speakeasy, Scott.
Sure. Speakeasy is a 38-year-old communication consulting company with offices in Atlanta, New York, and San Francisco. And we work with some of the world's most respected executives and leadership teams with regard to their communication internally with their respective staffs as well as externally with their customers and clients.
Now, how are you defining communication? Is it like verbal, like we're doing here, or is it newsletters? Is it blogs?
It's primarily the spoken word,
mm-hmm,
but also communication strategy.
So do you find that senior-level executives, as accomplished as they may be, as bright as they may be, are sometimes fearful of getting in front of the employees and saying things in front of large groups and equally uncomfortable even in small group settings?
Fear is one issue, but there's a variety of them. Primarily, most senior-level executives did not pass a test on communication to get there.
Do you think they should?
It would be an interesting proposition. It would change the view of leadership, I guarantee you that. But the problem or the challenge is that a lot of executives find themselves in leadership roles where their responsibility of influence is quite significant, but their communication capabilities or competencies are not quite there. Unfortunately, they get a lot of artificial or distorted feedback around their communication, so they believe they're a lot better than they really are.
We tell them what they want to hear if we work for them, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
you were great. Hey, Lee, you were great, by the way.
Yeah. So your job is to tell them what they don't want to hear? That must be hard then.
We do a lot of that. We do a lot of that. In fact, it's probably one of the competencies that we help executives with is the idea of self-awareness.
Right. So how do you go about doing that? Is it as simple as just recording them and having them listen back?
We do a lot of different kinds of consulting work. We do workshops. We put through about 5,000 executives through workshops every year. We do a lot of private coaching. We do a lot of video recording assessment and feedback. So we're trying to give them a more accurate view of themselves and represent the kind of development and coaching that they need to become more effective and better.
Boy, that video is an unforgiving medium. I mean, it's a marvelous teaching tool, I'm sure, but it's an unforgiving medium.
In addition to videotaping, we do a lot of peer workshops. So we think that peer-to-peer feedback is more powerful than video feedback. So we structure workshops where we put, for example, 6 to 8 C-suite executives in a room together who don't know each other and will likely never see themselves again, and we have them discuss their communication capabilities with each other, and it can be quite profound for them.
But there are mechanics that can be taught, right? This is teachable. There are techniques and strategies and stuff that you can transfer to these folks.
It is a learned competency, but we do not really focus on technique and tips and tricks. We're more about authenticity, transparency, honesty, directness, being real. And for a lot of executives, they have the assumption that that's not the way they're supposed to communicate, that they are to put on behaviors that
make them... So they're like acting out a role in a movie of a leader?
Exactly.
Is that what you find? And then you're trying to kind of break that down and get them into just be yourself?
Exactly. So 80% of effective leadership is a result of spoken communication. And the leaders who are considered the best at leadership tend to be the ones who are the most real and grounded and centered and authentic.
So other than David over here, what was the draw to EO? What compelled you to get involved with these folks?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. Even though our company is 38 years old, we're growing and expanding. And the attraction to me about EO was this idea of learning. I'm a life learner. I think it's the missing link in a lot of successful businesses that leadership stops learning, and that's where they hit the wall. So I want to make sure I don't fall in that trap. And being around a group of individuals who, I mean, their pursuit is learning. It's knowledge share and really trying to find from each other the answers to the questions that they have that they don't know who to ask.
Now, David, as I understand it, you guys have been really successful in setting up the kind of environment where these folks are not trying to sell each other stuff. They're really genuinely trying to learn from each other. I'm sure a great deal of that is the caliber of people that you invite into your inner circle, like Mr. Weiss here. What else has allowed you to reach that higher plane, if you will, do you think?
Well, the selling to each other, that's a very explicit no. I mean, there's a lot of business that happens between EO members,
right,
but it's part of our bylaws, and you agree that you will not solicit business from other EO members.
Uh-huh.
If it's even the act of handing out business cards is sometimes looked down upon unless someone asks for it. And that's what builds a safe environment. That's one of the strongest factors for me, was feeling that I could walk into a room of 40, 50, 60 other entrepreneurs and not feel that I was going to be sold on IT services, insurance, supplies, anything.
Because there are meetings, there are conferences, there are events where someone like you that has had your degree of success and is leading an organization, like when you were leading Patty Wax, you got this great big target on your back, right? Everybody wants to talk to that David Duncan guy because he's got a budget, right?
Well, in an EO group, everyone's got that target on their back. And I learned very quickly that I was a very, very tiny fish in a very, big pond. I found that I was not the smartest guy in the room by any stretch of the means.
You know, that's starting to happen to me more and more, too. I don't know what that's about. So you're able to do that. And then on the other side of things, obviously you've built the kind of environment where people are willing to be a little bit vulnerable and,
absolutely,
and lay it out there and say, hey, guys, I'm hurting here, here, and here. What can you do to offer help? That too, speaks the volume
to
think about.
The way the organization works is there's chapter-wide events. There's entire EO global events. But the real meat and bulk of the organization, what probably 80% of the members get value out of, is a forum. And you get broken into groups of 6 to 10 individuals where you meet on a monthly basis. And you quickly become very intimate with that group. You stay with the same group. And so there's a very deep respect for each other. There's privacy that goes on. It's a very confidential setting. So for about 3 to 4 hours each month, you meet. There's a process of how the meeting is run, how business presentations are made. And rather than sitting in an environment where if I have an issue or a topic I'm bringing up on my business or personal life, I know that if I present it, I'm not going to be told by these people what to do. All that I'm going to hear is some experience sharing. I'm going to hear if they've had a similar issue and how they dealt with it and what level of success or failure they had. And so, you know, I have to take ownership of taking away from those lessons what I'm going to do with that. So it does create an environment of trust, of relaxation, and all of that leads to vulnerability, I believe.
Now, does this group become kind of a de facto board of advisors for you, or do you have a separate board of advisors that you go to about kind of...
I think both. I mean, that's a personal thing. For me, it was a de facto board of advisors. They've turned into my best friends. Right. I've been with my forum for the entire time I've been NEO. We've added some people, dropped some people since then, but the core of our group has been together. We're very close. We travel a lot, do a lot of socializing together.
So it kind of it moved beyond just kind of business stuff. It moved into personal?
Absolutely. And I think that's the unique thing about a lot of entrepreneurs is the day doesn't end at 5 p.m. It's a constant.
Right. It's 24/7.
It's 24/7.
Right.
And so there's a lot of people that don't necessarily understand that except other entrepreneurs.
Right.
So for those organizations that qualify and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. who may be interested, how can they find out more and learn more about EO?
Well, in the Atlanta area, you can go to eoatlanta.com or eoatlanta.org. And nationally, it's eoaccess.com.
And Scott, where can we reach out and learn more about Speakeasy and the work that you guys are doing?
Our website is www.speakeasyinc.com.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both for coming down and visiting with us. It was a fantastic experience and great to see you again, David. Always fun to learn about what EO's up to. And
thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for introducing us to Scott. I look forward to learning more about Speakeasy, man.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what, one idea, and I'm sure Lee would be up for this. You might come back with a client sometime, you know, an executive that you've worked with, and we hear from their perspective.
Would love to.
I think that'd make for a cool show, don't you guys think?
Absolutely.
It'd be fun stuff.
Yes.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Randy Gold, Al Myers, David Duncan, and Mr. Scott Weiss. And special thank you to our sponsor for this segment, BusinessWise. From all of us here at the Business Radio X family, we'll see you in the fast lane.